What's up, nerds? It's basketball. Welcome to Horse, a basketball podcast about everything except for the wins and losses. My name is Mike Schubert, and I'm joined by my trusted co-host, the NBA TV ratings apparently being down to this being a big deal and no one's allowed to shoot three-pointers anymore. It's Adam Amawala. Adam, how's it going?
I think we got to go all the way back to the early days of basketball. Ban the three-pointer. That's the only solution.
Ooh. I think we got to go all the way back and people should start shooting into peach baskets. Let's go all the way back.
Don't even think about dunking on those peach baskets.
No dribbling. Foul. Let's go original basketball. Yep. No dribbling, throwing it into peach baskets, and people have to wear pants with leather belts.
Well, that part I actually do think they should employ regardless of the other stuff.
I don't understand why this is a whole thing where it's like, oh, every 5 years, we have to decide the three-pointers are destroying the game and thus America. It's wild to me. I understand, like, some of the concerns of, like, oh, some teams are just throwing up shots. Like, there was that Bulls game where I think you guys shot, like...
Yeah, it was bad.
It was bad. I get it, but also, like, I guess I get it from a complaint viewership perspective, but also the math nerd in me is like, well, it's just so much more efficient. Like, that's why everyone's doing it. Like, the only way to change it is to make, like, it a 2.6 repeating pointer or something.
Yeah. I actually have a completely different proposal that I feel very strongly about, which is that I feel like every single NBA game I watch, there are at least 5 times per game where someone gets called for stepping on the baseline just because people are so much more spread out than they used to be. And it completely ruins the flow of the possession. And literally no one wants to watch a possession end that way. Widen the court and let people keep spacing and shooting threes. Yeah. Okay?
That's my thing. If you, like, from a three-point perspective, if you actually want to do something, because people have suggested, like, put a four-point line. No. Then Steph Curry's just going to make four pointers, and you'll complain about that. The one thing I think would actually fix it is if you made the court wider to where a corner three is not actually, like, as short as it is. So then it's, like, a farther shot. Now, I guess you could also play devil's advocate there and say, well, you know, the advantage of the corner three being closer is met with the disadvantage of you don't have as much room to operate. So, like, you know, I feel like you can always find the other argument to make. But I think the easier thing is when we're talking about, like, oh, what's making the games not fun to watch and viewership down? Like, if you're specifically saying that three-point shooting is the reason ratings are lower, which I don't know if that's the case. You know what you could do? Fix anything else about the viewer experience.
Right.
Like, maybe not have 75,000 commercials with 75,000 gambling ads and have everything be branded and sponsored and brought to you by this and presented by that. Like, there's so many other clear, easy fixes that would make it so much more fun to watch. And I think it's so funny that the thing that we have to run to is, like, the actual game. It's like, what if we just got rid of all of these betting ads all over the place? Maybe people would enjoy watching it more then.
I just feel like every sport has these swings where they, like, overcorrect too far one way and then they have to overcorrect again. And, like, I mean, early baseball reference here, I feel like we've just in the past 5 to 10 years gone from, like, there's not enough runs being scored. We got to juice the baseball so there's a million home runs. And then it's like, oh, no, everyone's getting rocked and the pitchers aren't happy. So we got to lower the pitching mound. But the baseballs will be this. Like, it's the same thing as the All-Star game. Every single year, there's this new debate about, like, well, it was bad last year. So what if this time the losing team gets executed? It's like, well, maybe we don't have to go that far. I think there's probably a middle ground where people try, but the consequences are not that severe.
Yeah, I mean, look, even the All-Star game this year is doing some weird new format where it's like a 4-team mini tournament with, like, 3 smaller All-Star teams drafted by Kenny, Chuck, and Shaq. How is it Kenny? How is it not Ernie? What are we doing? No one likes
Kenny. They got to give Kenny a job. I think that's basically what it is. But I think, and then the other team, the fourth team is, like, whoever wins the Rising Stars game, who theoretically will be hungry.
Whoever wins the Rising Stars game, and then there's this, like...
ready to prove themselves.
I get, like, they're trying to find ways to have it have more stakes, but just, I don't know that that is the solution. It's very confusing in, like, the format and, like, who plays who and who advances and all this stuff. It's just, I think here's what's worked for the NBA Cup, because people care about the NBA Cup. The people who win get paid a lot of money.
Yeah.
Do that for the All-Star Game. Like, the NBA Cup, there's a lot of incentive to win. It's worth $500,000 for each player. The G League even did that. The Westchester Knicks, my beloved Westchester Knicks, just won their second consecutive G League showcase. Every player who wins gets $100,000. And if you're a G League player, yeah, that's like... deal. Astronomical. That yeah. is like almost certainly more than what your contract is. So
yeah.
that's a huge incentive for players. So I think just give the people money. Just give them money.
Yeah. Well, that was quite a tangent from the initial the such and such to the whatever.
It's just been building up. I've heard so many people complaining about the sport rather than just like talking about the sport. You know, we're here to have fun. Let's have fun. And speaking of that fun, we're going to get ready to talk about fun basketball stuff. We got to do that in the Tomb Memorial locker room, where no one is worrying about, you know, how far away people are throwing, you know, towels into receptacles. People are yeah. throwing them from far away and everyone's like, yay, go for it. Have fun. You know who else is having fun?
Probably our patrons.
Yes, our patrons are having a blast. Shout out to our patrons, all of them, and shout out to our producer-level patrons, Polly Bird, Salvatore Testa, Siobhan Ellsbury, Don't Go Chasing Taco Falls, Bang Bang, Roast Beef Debris, Denver Steam Nuggets, Anna Reed, Pass Steph Curry the Damn Ball So He Can Shoot a Three.
Bang! That was a Steve Kerr quote. I don't know if you saw all that, but he was getting pissed.
Yep, understandably so. Hi, Trish, Chase Underulo, Naked Rachel, Sidney Crosby's a Vampire, Chelsea's Cousin, Ginger Spurs Boy, Balls to the Walls, and Mats Furley. And now that we've talked about the Patreon really quick, I do want to give a bit of an update about stuff. The new tiers are in effect. Unfortunately, the new tiers went into effect like a day later than they said they were going to, meaning that when we set up our new tiers of Bang, Double Bang, and Triple Bang, that they got auto-doubled into the auto-doubling. So all of the old tiers got auto-doubled, since we used to charge you usually twice a month, and now we are charging once per month. But those new tiers I made also got doubled. So there's some of you, the very early adopters, got charged more than you should have. I'm currently in talks with Patreon to see if we can get you a refund. If not, we can do it manually. So if you did get charged double for the new tiers, I'll be there to fix it, and we'll figure all out what we got to do. And as a reminder, your December bill is going to be more than your November bill, no matter what, because we had to offset that, but your November bill was less than usual. But all of this is to say, now the new tiers are there. They are correct. They have all of the new features and stuff that you get, and they are at the correct prices of $5 a month, $10 a month, and $25 a month. If you're in one of the old tiers, you don't have to switch your tier, but we would recommend that you do so, because then you won't lose out on the posts. You'll know exactly what you can expect. And in some cases, like if you're at the highest tier, you'll actually save $5 a month, because it used to be $30 a month, and now it's $25 a month. So head on over to patreon.com/horsehoops, update that stuff, and you'll be good to go. And thank you to everyone who's been through us on this wild journey where we can't seemingly get a straight answer out of Patreon.
Yes, we do appreciate your patience. And if there is anything that I would think that our patrons, and hopefully all of you listening, know about this podcast, we are not low-end criminals who are trying to, in a very, very long and arduous con, get extra money from anyone. It's a Patreon thing. We're going to make it right, so. Apologies.
Yeah, it is not a 5-year long con where we're trying to screw over 42 people on the internet who've decided to pay like us money for the total. Yes, but thank you to everyone supporting. And you know who else is supporting in a way that is not illegal?
Our sponsor.
Our sponsor, it's Tab for a Cause. Tab for a Cause, something so good you might think it's illegal, but it isn't illegal. You go to tabforacause.org/horse. You install it in your browser. Then every time you open a tab, you get a pretty picture of something. Sometimes it's nature, sometimes it's buildings. And you might see some ads in the corner, but those ads help raise money for charity. You get to pick what charities are supported, and it's great. Every time you open a tab, you get a heart, and then you can pick where those hearts go. That tells Tab for a Cause where to donate their funds. They do timely stuff as well. It's a good time all around. We'll do our tab check. I actually have a good chunk of tabs open right now.
Oh, wow.
I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I have 11 tabs open.
I was going to be mad if you said anything under double digits. If you were like, 11. Oh, I have so many tabs open. I have 3. I would have been frustrated. But let's see what I have. I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. 19. Under 20 is actually pretty low.
Under 20 is pretty good. Yeah. Look, so look at us. You're lower than normal. I'm higher than normal. But yes, go to tab4acause.org/horse and get started today. Okay, now, unless you're listening on Patreon, where you get access to episodes without these inserted ads, you'll hear some inserted ads, and the ones that aren't read by us are inserted locally. Once those ads are complete, we'll get back into this episode of Force. Adam, what do you got going on?
I've got a siren going on.
Oh, boy. How about I tell you what I've got going on while the siren goes then? Great. So I've got all those same shows that I've mentioned. It's stuff that's booked out through the beginning of May, but doing a bunch of stuff in the U.S., mostly East Coast-ish, going all the way up to Montreal as well. So doing some northern stuff. We're hitting up Buffalo. We're hitting up Montreal. And then I've got a Midwest run going through in April, where I'm going to hit some new cities that I've never performed in, such as Des Moines, Iowa, and performing in cities I haven't performed in years, like Columbus, Ohio. So head on over to schub.es/tour to check out when those dates are, see which of those are TNO and Potterless shows, which ones are just the newest Olympian, whole bunch of stuff. And I'm very excited. Some of them are already selling pretty well. Like Richmond, Virginia is already like half sold out. So get on your tickets today.
Nice.
What you got going on now that your siren is gone?
Yes, yes. For the moment, the siren is gone. We'll see if it returns. If you are listening to this the day it comes out on New Year's Eve, if you're like, it's New Year's Eve, I live in the Albany area, what the hell am I going to do tonight? I'm going to tell you what you're going to do. You're going to come see me at the Albany Funny Bone. And if you're in that area, I have a couple other shows there as well. So New Year's Eve, I'll be at the Albany Funny Bone, which is in Albany itself. Then on Friday, January 31st, I will be in Glens Falls at the Park Theater. I've done it before. It's a beautiful venue. And then the Bennington Theater in Bennington, Vermont, the following night, which is February 1st. Those are all within like a 1 to 1.5 hour radius. Other stuff I have coming up: Sunday, January 12th, I will be headlining Zany's in Chicago. Tickets are selling well for that one, so make sure to grab those sooner than later. On Wednesday, January 29th, I'm going to be at the Laughing Skull, which is in Atlanta. I've already had some patrons reach out and some horse listeners reach out to say that they're going to be there and that they'll bring a horse jersey for me to sign. So I'm looking forward to meeting some of you in Atlanta. And then a few other things to mention: the weekend of Valentine's Day, I'm going to be at the Dallas Comedy Club in Dallas, Texas. The following weekend, I'm going to be at Comic Sense, which is in Boulder, Colorado. And then a bunch of other stuff after that. But we'll leave it there for now. I'm sure we'll be plugging more stuff in the weeks to come.
Mm-hmm. So now, do we have an NB Q&A, or should we just get into Full Court Press, get out like the news?
You know what? I had an unofficial NB Q&A, which was messaging back and forth with one of our listeners, Matthew, aka Ginger Spurs Boy. I do believe I have the correct person.
Yes.
About like how to fix the All-Star game, that sort of stuff. So I feel like we've already kind of pre-answered it. So I'm gonna call that our unofficial official NB Q&A for the day.
Yeah, I think you want to have stakes. You want people to take it seriously. The two ways to do it are have external factors, like throw a bunch of money at them.
Right.
Or you just need one person who just really cares a lot.
Yeah, that helps.
If Anthony Edwards gets there and he's like, you know what, I really want to win. I think you would need like a group, because you would need like one team. I think what would be really funny is we need one of these years where we've got just like two teams normal, like East versus West or whatever it is. And then just like one team all gets together and just decides like, we're actually going to try really hard.
Right.
And then for the first 5 minutes.
Because no one wants to get embarrassed out there.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
Like, if you just don't tell the other team that you're going to try really hard and then you try really hard, that would do it. But like, I understand why these guys don't want to try hard. Like, if you get injured during the All-Star game, it's the most ridiculous thing ever. I'm sure these teams are telling these guys not to try hard. So like, I get it from that perspective as well.
Well, and Matthew had a pretty wild idea that I'm sure he wouldn't mind me sharing, but he's like, maybe if they threw in things like not being able to be traded or be able to enter free agency earlier, or contract stuff, like that would make people, and like, yes, it would. Whoa. It'll never happen. But could you imagine?
If they did a thing where it was like the All-Star Game MVP gets to add a player option to their contract, which is when you can decide whether or not you want to keep the last year of your deal or end it a year early. Oh my goodness, that would be unreal. I think that would be kind of fun.
If the Rising Stars team wins, they get to switch contracts with the with the losing team. Everybody, LeBron's back on a rookie deal, and the rookies are on a super.
Honestly, I would be so down with the NBA doing some more creative things to get people paid more. Like, we've got the NBA Cup where you can make $500,000. Like, maybe do do something with the Rising Stars thing of like, okay, there's a team made up of G League guys on 2-8 contracts. And if that team wins, all their contracts are guaranteed for the end of the season.
Yeah. Like,
yeah. Why not? And then make it like not, you know, like the team doesn't have to pay, right? Because then it might like screw over the luxury tax. But just like the NBA uses all of the money that they make off the All-Star game. And they are like, okay, now Jacob Toppin gets to make $100,000 more dollars this year. Like, why not?
Or lean into the anti-three movement and make threes count as twos and twos count as threes.
More dunks, baby.
3-point dunks. I like that.
Alrighty. Now, let's get into full court press, get it like the news. There's some stuff going on. There's NBA stuff. There's WNBA stuff. There's a lot. Let's start with the happiest and the least spicy. Greg Popovich, who unfortunately had suffered a stroke, is now seeming like he's coming back, or at least he's on the road to recovery, which is awesome. He had a statement come out that he wrote in classic Pop fashion. He ended it with a little joke at the end, talking about how like, oh, the people who are, you know, helping him back can't wait to get rid of him. You know, he's not very coachable. It's so clearly like he's cracking jokes. He's back in the mix. But it was super scary when I saw the news that he had a stroke. He's getting up there in age and he's an absolute legend and also just a nice person outside of his basketball prowess in terms of coaching. So I'm glad that he seems to be doing okay.
Absolutely.
So glad that he is back in the mix. Now, there's other stuff that is spicier. At last full court press, we had just started recording as there were some rumblings reported by Shams Charania that Jimmy Butler might be on the trade block, you know, whether that's him trying to force his way out or the Heat trying to trade him. And shortly after us posting, so this is a weird like horse recording curse kind of, but not really.
Yeah.
Not too long after, Jimmy Butler's agent, Bernie Lee, made a statement, and he's got history with Shams, so this feels like this wasn't just this that sparked all this vitriol, but he wrote a post, and his first post started with, "All right, listen," which just, I mean, come on. What a way to start. "All right, listen, I gave you a pass yesterday because I was busy, but if you don't stop putting my name on your complete and utter made-up bullshit because you know you normally aren't worth my time to acknowledge," then it's a follow-up post because this is on Twitter, "I don't know what I'm going to do because I'm a middle-aged dad, but just know that it would indicate severe dislike. World, all this is fabricated. I have never, and honestly, it wouldn't help me or the position I represent to do anything that's been reported by said journalist, in quotes."
Oh.
Yeah. He then went on to, after Shams, so the next thing that happened was Shams basically was like, "I 1,000% stand by my reporting. It's all sourced and vetted. Like, I take this super seriously." And then Bernie Lee tweeted, you know, quote tweeted this sort of thing with something to the effect of like, "Shams, just say ChatGPT writes your articles. It's okay." Like, just wild back and forth kind of stuff. But I don't know. I don't know.
"Keep my client's name out your fucking mouth," is the subtext.
Right. Yeah. I don't know who to believe here. It could be something where maybe the information Shams had isn't legit, or maybe Bernie Lee is just upset that Shams got this information. Like, right. I could see either person being honest here. I just think it's so funny because in the grand scheme of things, like, who cares? Who cares? Like, it would be different if this was the off season and there were actual negotiations going on. And maybe there are, like, whoever trades for Jimmy Butler because he's in the last year of his deal, he's got a player option. So, like, maybe it does kind of change up the market there. But, like, I don't know. We're bickering about who told who what or who said what to who. And it's just the type of drama the NBA lives for, you know?
It would be really funny if Woj came out of retirement just to tweet about a Jimmy Butler trade and beat Shams to it. Like, the guy gives it to Woj even though he's out of the game just to spite Shams.
It's a strange thing that, like, even in retirement, Woj has found a way to make himself look better than Shams. Just because I think there's been, like, two things so far this year that have been kind of, like, shady Shams-related things.
Yeah.
And it's already, you know, even though Woj isn't actively reporting, now the whole narrative is like, well, Woj never had this happen. So, like, weirdly, by being out of the game, he's still, like, minting his legacy even more. It's just masterful, masterful stuff from Woj.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how much any of this is true. And it's like, if a couple months from now, Jimmy Butler gets traded, then it kind of, even if it wasn't true when he reported it, it kind of legitimizes what Shams was saying. So it'll be interesting to see how that all develops.
Right. If I had to pick someone to believe, I think I would believe Shams, because it would be weird, because specifically in his reporting, he has been mentioning specifics about like who's putting who on the market, if his agent is saying stuff. Like, it would be so strange for Shams to be very specific in his lies. Like, if you're going to just like make up stuff, you would just say like sources say and be super vague about it. But he's been like very particular. So either he's been fed the wrong information, or Bernie Lee's just mad that Shams figured it out. So whatever it is.
I agree. I think it's more likely that Bernie is just pissed off.
Right. And look, Jimmy being traded could definitely happen. Like, the Heat aren't having necessarily a great season. There's some teams with people to move. Like, obviously the Lakers always trying to make a step up. The Suns are not doing super well with Bradley Beal. Like, he's not a perfect fit. Jimmy Butler might make more sense. So like, that could be a trade. So we'll have to see how the actual trade develops. But there's spice abound. There is spice abound. Now, speaking of spice abound, we are in another situation with the WNBA. It keeps happening where there's Caitlin Clark drama that has nothing to do with Caitlin Clark. Yeah. It keeps happening. But this time what happened is Caitlin Clark was named Time's Person of the Year. And the owner of the Atlanta Dream, I don't even know if they had some interview already planned and that just kind of came up, or if they wanted to get this off their chest and they scheduled this, but they made some sort of statement basically saying like, there's more than just Caitlin Clark who has done the wonderful work to make the WNBA more popular this season. I think that it should have been everyone in the league, or the whole WNBA should have been the person of the year. And I understand her sentiment, but I think it's ridiculous for her to say this, because specifically in the interview for Time Person of the Year, because she was interviewed for the thing, and then they do some sort of like, you know, like press engagement kind of thing where she's like speaking on a stage with a microphone, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
She has said, Caitlin, multiple times that like, it's not just her. She credits the people who came before her, specifically Black women who were the foundational stars of the early league. And she always is giving credit to other people. Yet people are always mad that she is the one that's getting the hype. Like, it's one thing to get upset, but like, Caitlin Clark specifically is saying the right thing at every single step. Why are all these people mad at Caitlin Clark? It's so ridiculous to me.
It's called Time Person of the Year. It's person, singular. Like, I don't. The fact that the male person of the year was Donald Trump and there are more people bitching about Caitlin Clark says so much about society that I don't even want to get into it.
Right. It's ridiculous. And we were texting about this with one of our buddies, Chris, and I think we kind of all came at this. I don't know who of us made this joke first, but we eventually got to the point where we were joking about, what does this owner want? Does she want like a full like graduation day photo where all 144 players are on the cover? Like, or it's just like the WNBA logo? Like, it's one of those things where just because there is a person selected, like, you can then make it about more than just her. And especially if you like actually read the article where Caitlin Clark gives credit to all of the other women currently in the league and those who came before her, then like, you would understand that it's not just Caitlin. But I don't know. It just seems like a lot of people are mad at Caitlin Clark for no good reason. And I don't get it. It seems like most players don't mind her, even the like so-called rivals that she has. Like, even with Angel Reese, like, it feels like a just basketball rivalry. Like, it does not feel personal. So I don't know. People would just love to get mad at Caitlin Clark, and she's never involved. And you got to give credit to her for always saying the right thing and then also backing it up on the court as well. So more drama, more drama. One final thing before we wrap up Full Court Press, get it like the news. There's something fun that happened in a Knicks game recently when they were playing the Pelicans. The towel boys who like wipe up sweat on the court got called for a technical foul, and it was really good.
What was the context? What did they do?
So it was a delay of game warning, but it was the second delay of game warning. So in an NBA game, if you do something that like makes the clock wind down too much, your team can get a delay of game warning. This is like if the ball goes through the hoop and then you kind of like knock it out of bounds and it's hard for the other team to get to.
Right.
You get this warning because like there's lots of situations where the clock is running, so that could have a competitive advantage. So in the NBA, you'll get a warning for this once. And then if you do it a second time in the game, it's a technical foul. So the Pelicans had already been given one of these warnings. And then there was an out of bounds play that was questionable. and someone from the Pelicans bench to try and buy them more time, because these guys on the bench, like assistant coaches, are watching the live feed and they'll try to see the replays and stuff. This happens in baseball as well. So they're trying to like see if they can see a replay before it's too late to call for the challenge. So someone on the bench told them to wipe up a wet spot on the ground, but no one had fallen recently.
Oh, wow.
So it was clearly BS. So once they did that, I don't know if Knicks players heard it, but like Jalen Brunson and Josh Hart and Mikal Bridges were like all on top of it. And once this happened, they immediately pointed out to the refs that they can't do it because like the play was live and got in the way of where Jalen was going to inbound the ball. And the refs, credit to them as well, immediately called the delay of game. They knew that it was some shenanigans and it was a technical foul. So technically.
That's funny. Other than the Jason Kidd thing when he was coaching and he was like, hey, run into me so I can intentionally spill this glass of water and then it'll basically get us a free timeout. I haven't heard anything quite that creative. So I guess credit to the Pelicans for, getting inventive with ways to get a little extra time. But yeah, you can't do that.
Yeah. And I got to give a shout out to Rob Perez, Worldwide WAP, because at first people were just like, ha ha ha, this is a funny thing.
Yeah.
And some people thought Jalen Brunson was being like Chris Paulish, right? Like when he got people in trouble for having untucked jerseys.
Right,
but then
he
saw what was going down on the sideline. So, like the next day, people recognized, oh, this happened because the Pelicans are trying to pull some stuff. So
that's
just wonderful. This is what horse is all about. This
really
is why we're here.
Yeah.
But that is going to conclude Full Court Press, Get It Like the News. And now we will conclude this episode with a really fun interview that we did that you helped put together. So why don't you tell us what is to come, Adam?
Yeah. So, obviously we mentioned on the last episode that Spotify Wrapped just came up. Which is like a really fun, flirty way for Spotify to let us know how much they're observing everything that we do all the time. But all that to say, we appreciated when we were in your, top five. One of my top listened to podcasts is Office Ladies, which is an office recap podcast hosted by Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey, who played Pam and Angela on The Office. It's a wildly popular podcast, but their producer is a person named Cassie Jerkins. And on a recent episode of Office Ladies, Cassie did this amazing thing where they had gone back to watch the very famous basketball episode of The Office from season one. And Cassie was giving comparisons of like each office character to their NBA counterpart. So to tease one, it was like a Dwight Schrute, Nikola Jokic comparison, because Dwight loves his job, but he's truly passionate about his farm. And like, it was just a dead on comparison of Nikola Jokic. So having heard that, I, as one does these days, reached out to Cassie on Instagram. Cassie was into the idea of coming on to do a little bit of chatting about The Office and her career in comedy and podcasting. And we had a wonderful time. And that interview is going to be right now. Okay, as previously alluded to, we have a very special guest on the podcast today. She is a comedian from Los Angeles, who you can see at UCB, but also the executive producer of the hit podcast Office Ladies, joining us to talk about hoops and many other things. Cassie Jerkins, thank you so much for being here.
Hello, of course. Happy to be here.
Absolutely. Now, I want to give some context as to how this idea came to be, because obviously you work very closely with the Office Ladies, and you were talking about the basketball episode of The Office, and you did a brilliant analysis of comparing office basketball, both playing and personality styles, to their NBA counterparts. Talk to us a little bit about how that came to be, and then I think we'll get into your background with basketball.
Yeah, absolutely. So Office Ladies, we finished doing a rewatch, but we're like going back and seeing what we missed. And so I'm just was catching up on season one. And what was fun was I like watched the super fan episode of basketball, which like added a lot more scenes of them actually playing basketball.
Yeah.
And And I feel like when I watched The Office, it like way back in the day, I was not a basketball fan. So I was just like, a lot of jokes just went over my head. But watching it very recently, I was like, oh, these basketball jokes are very funny and like very specific to like jokes that basketball fans would get, and non-basketball fans too. But as I was watching that, I was like, it just made me start thinking about like the personalities of basketball players. And then I kind of pitched the idea to Jen and Angela, like, what if we compared like NBA stars, WNBA stars to office characters? And they were like, we love that, but we don't know basketball like you do. So why don't you handle it? Because I was already like sending them a doc, like pictures of Jokic, like on his farm and being like, he's exactly like Dwight. And they're like, wow.
Handle
this.
Of all of the comparisons, the Dwight Schrute to Nikola Jokic is like the most direct line Like a guy who's very workmanlike, but sees his job as a job and his true passion is his farm. Like I cannot imagine a better comparison.
Yeah.
For me, I went through the full, like the full range of like not seeing it initially. And then once you started talking more and you referenced the farm, I was like, of course, the horses, the beets. Yes. Like, how did I not see this?
Yeah. And I mean, there's famously like initially there was a spinoff called The Farm that would have been like after The Office. I feel like Nikola Jokic's whole life is just waiting for his spinoff, The Farm, done with playing basketball.
I would watch that reality show. That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, especially because he will take all of his millions that he's made from playing basketball. And I feel like he will just have the most fantastic farm. Like he's going to be feeding his horses, whatever the optimal horse feed is. And I'm sure his wheels on his chariots. I don't even know what the proper words are. Like he's going to have a very robust horse life afterwards. And I feel like the nation of Serbia will be mad because like he has horses that he races. And I feel like every other racing horse is going to be like, well, yeah, of course he's got $500 million.
Yeah.
I feel like the name of this podcast is the only reason to believe that Nikola Jokic will one day be a guest. I think otherwise he would ignore
our
emails. But yeah, we could trick him.
I think you can get there. This is a little off topic, but have you been following how like the Clippers has their new stadium called the Intuit Dome? And there's this whole section called The Wall, which is like...
The Wall.
Yeah. And like it's... So far, statistically, it is like it's working. Like people's free throws are like worse there. But for the Nuggets, when Jokic had his free throws, somebody was wearing a horse head and holding a sign that said like "Miss you, Dad."
It was great. Oh my God. It was so good. Yeah, I'm glad The Wall was one of those things, like when it was announced as like it's the dedicated fan only section. It's behind the backboard and you know, it's going to be hard for people to do it. It's one of those things where I'm like, okay, they're going for like the college sort of thing and this should work, but it might not. And they've just knocked it out of the park. Like it's been absolutely perfect. And you're right. They'd like legitimately opponents are shooting worse free throws at the dome. It's wild.
It is so wild. And I haven't sat in the section yet. I want to, but I feel like I can only do it once because it seems like you're up on your feet chanting the entire time. Like it is a workout in its own. But
bust out the Hokas, you'll be on your feet all night.
Exactly.
So you mentioned that when you watched The Office when it was originally on, you were at that time not a basketball fan. So before we even get into your career and the genesis of how you got to where you are now, talk to us about your history like as a basketball fan. Like how did basketball come into your life?
It's a little random in that it kind of caught me like by surprise. I was just like watching the Olympics in 2020 and I'm a quarter Japanese. So during the Olympics, I'm like rooting for the US and Japan. And I was like looking at games and being like, what do I want to watch? And I noticed like women's basketball for Japan was playing. And I was like, oh, that's fun. I'll watch them play basketball. And I like clicked on it and I was like, oh my gosh, all these women are like under 6 foot and they're balling like crazy. And
Japanese women team's legit. They gave us a real scare this time around in the Olympics, knocking all those threes.
Like in 2020, they got silver and like it was only the US that could beat them. But I was like very inspired because I'm 5'2 and I'm like, wait, I could be playing basketball this entire time. Like, I feel like basketball and volleyball are two sports that I'm just like, I'm not even going to try. Yeah.
And you didn't grow up playing basketball?
Mm-mm, no, I didn't really play sports, which now looking back, I'm like, damn, I missed my good years. But I started watching basketball from there and then got really into the WNBA and then NBA. And now I play basketball, which is super fun. And like, and I'm very much inspired by Japan of like, if you can be a shooter, like, and just get that space, that's all you need to be small.
That's very cool. So now that you play basketball, who would you compare yourself to? Like, what kind of game do you have?
I mean, I still feel like I'm very much like still learning and everything, but I'm definitely inspired more by like smaller players. And like, one of my heroes is a Japanese player named Rui Machida. She has the most assists like ever in the Olympics. And it's just like being small and like, I'm still developing, like, I want to get better at like seeing the whole court and where everybody is when I'm playing. Do you guys play as well?
Yes. Yeah, so you got to get that court vision up.
But yeah.
It's tricky. That's one of the harder things to do because you have to be so confident in your dribbling ability that you are not ever looking down. It's tough. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And being like, okay, instead of me taking the shot, who's open so I can get it to them in a fun, creative way.
Now, do you play like a rec league or like an artist league or what's the vibe?
Yeah, I play in a rec league on Tuesday nights. Weirdly, like a lot of people are in the entertainment industry that play. So it is kind of funny. And there's like this unspoken rule of like, don't hit the face because a lot of actors play.
No touching of the hair or face. Yeah. It's Anchorman rules, great. Basically.
Yeah. It's great.
Exactly, yeah. But it's pretty competitive. And then I do pick up basketball whenever I can too. So that's fun.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
And then we've alluded to the Clippers logo behind you, the dome. Yeah. So what led you to Clippers fandom?
That was probably more influenced by my boyfriend who he loves basketball too, but he like was very serious and like, I got to pick my team. And he was like really thinking about it. And then he landed on the Clippers because one, we live in LA, but two, Clippers played in Buffalo where he's from, and then they played in San Diego where I'm from. So it was like this weird, like serendipitous, like calling. Yeah. And we're like, yeah. And then, yeah, just through watching them, we've like fallen in love with them. But I want to say like the hardest thing about sports is like, I get attached to players and then they go to other teams and like WNBA, I feel like I don't really have like a team, like my heart's like in seven places. So I just like watch the whole league because it's too hard. I get too attached to people.
You can't commit to the Sparks?
Well, also Sparks are in a rebuilding phase. So it's kind of hard to be a Sparks fan right now.
But then you can get in on the ground floor. You can be like a hipster about it. Like, oh, I became a fan when they sucked and now they're good.
Yeah, exactly.
So in terms of your career, how did that all come to be? Obviously, you're at UCB, so I assume you're in like the sketch and or improv world.
Yeah.
But then also, obviously, your work podcasting, how did that all happen?
Yeah. Primarily in the improv world. And UCB is just such a big community that you're meeting people constantly and you don't really know like how you're going to necessarily connect, you know, in the industry. Mm-hmm. And through UCB, like just some of my friends started working at Earwolf and podcasting. And then when the pandemic hit, I went from like, oh, I can't, you know, be physically at places like filming or performing or whatever. What else can I do? And the only two areas that were still working was animation and podcasting. And I'm like, well, mm-hmm. I am not an animator. I cannot draw, but I do know podcasting. So I started reaching out to my friends and then just like freelancing for Earwolf, and then the producer job for Office Ladies popped up and I applied for it, and the rest is history.
That's very cool. Yeah. Cause I mean, I know one of the running themes on Office Ladies is anytime they interview someone who was on The Office asking like, how did you get your job on The Office? So how did you get your job on Office Ladies? You applied and then did they interview you or how did that all go?
Yeah. They interviewed me. I remember I was like on a road trip. And then I got an email that was like, all right, you're going to meet with Jenna and Angela. And I like literally was in the bedroom of like my cousin's house in Houston, Texas, and being like, okay, I'm meeting Jenna and Angela today. So very
That's
weird,
cool.
But
yeah. And would you have considered yourself at the time to have been a fan or like a super fan of The Office or?
Not really, but I think that's kind of like in some ways like an advantage because I wasn't so like, this is like so untouchable. I think sometimes when you're too much of a super fan, like, it's just like, you can't be yourself or like, you know, whatever.
You wouldn't feel comfortable critiquing anything that the two hosts are doing, or it's like, oh, but it's Angela. Like, I can't say anything.
Exactly.
Be to her. Yeah.
And then, but I do think the con is like, if you're like a super fan, you know the show like so inside and out. So that was something that took me a while to develop, to be like, what are the fans like really like globbing onto about The Office? But then by working on the show, it was like, well, there's like things about The Office that like specifically speak to me. And I think every Office fan is different. And like, I think that's what's fun is there's so many characters so you can like identify with like different ones. So I think with time, I kind of like realized that with fans and kind of like got a little like relaxed a little because I just didn't want to like miss anything. You know, we wanted to honor the fandom as best as possible.
Yeah, it seems like the community around that podcast is really beautiful. And it kind of reflects the community around that show, you know, like I think even my Spotify Wrapped would reflect that it's probably my most listened to or, you know, top three podcasts. Yeah. And I think when you think back to The Office and what they say about it, it just seems like it was one of those magical environments where like everybody was bought in, everybody was happy to be there. There weren't a lot of those resentments and, you know, bitterness that you see on other shows. And it feels like the podcast has created a similar vibe between like you and Sam and the other people there. And obviously, like, I'm listening to what you all put into the world, but the impression that I get is that everyone's like very kind and nice to work with.
Yeah. And your impression's right. And I think too, like, the more I work in this industry, the more I realize, like, if your gut's like telling you, like, oh, I don't think these people like each other or whatever, like on a podcast, you're probably right. Yeah. And like, with Office Ladies, it really is like just such a like kind, considerate environment, and which makes it like really fun to work in. And like, we're just very honest with each other. So if there's times where we're like, oh, like I'm stressing about this or whatever, we all try to like work together to like help each other out so we can make our workflow as like smooth as possible. Cause when we do that, then our like creative like mindset can be like fully alive than like just, oh, we got to meet this deadline.
Right.
Are you both big Office fans? Like, do you have like a favorite character or like moment in the show?
Mike, I'll let you answer that first because I don't actually know the answer for you.
I've enjoyed the show, but I'm also not like a big rewatcher of shows in general. So I definitely marathoned it like all the way through after the show had finished.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, like a couple years out of college, just being able to like blitz through the whole show. And I really enjoyed it. I had a good time and then went on to watch like Parks and Rec, you know, because I was like, oh, I like the vibe of this. I'll like the vibe of that. And as far as like, I mean, the basketball episode was always my favorite, just it's as a so huge funny. Sports fan, and just like the jokes, like the little things like Kevin being a, you know, an absolute knockdown shooter and not being chosen is so funny. It's tough to pick favorite character. I might, maybe I'm inspired just by how, because I rewatched it and just watching Mahoop, but like I was always a gym guy. I always enjoyed breaking the fourth wall to camera, like the gym pam thing's very compelling. I will say, like, the fact that they thought that a 30-minute drive was a long-distance relationship still boils my blood. But other than that, big gym guy.
Yeah, you know what's funny, though, is that, and perhaps this is Jenna Fisher propaganda that has taken hold of me. The more I think about it and the more I rewatch The Office, I'm like, yeah, Jim was kind of a dick a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Like, he's really mean to Dwight. He does he makes like huge life decisions without consulting with Pam at all. And then like makes her feel bad about stuff. It's interesting because I never had that read on it when I watched it initially. I thought it was like, oh, it's perfect love story and like Jim's such a swell guy. And I think ultimately he is. But I feel like I look at also like being an adult watching it now. Cause the first time I watched it, I was like, I think I guess I was in high school maybe when The Office began.
Yeah.
And you don't really have a context for like what it would be like to buy a house without consulting with someone. Like, and then as someone in their 30s, I'm like, oh yeah, that's
insane. Okay. I completely forgot he did that. Again, I watched the show when I was like 24, 22, you know, so I think it's similar. But there are certain points I was like, Jim, you couldn't have called.
I think my relationship with the show, I wouldn't necessarily call myself like a super fan, but I've definitely watched it multiple times. And I found it to be, as a lot of people did, like it really swelled in popularity again during COVID. And I think that's not a coincidence, not only because it was on Netflix, but because it's like comfort food, right? Like you, everyone is so stressed and everyone is scared. And it felt like this like safe, happy thing.
Yeah.
Because at first, like in April of 2020, I was watching Ozark and then I was like, what the hell am I doing? Like it's already dark in society. Why am I watching this incredibly dark show? So I watched The Office at that time. But as someone who is in the stand-up world, it's interesting. A lot of people always want to know like who were the stand-up comics who inspired you. And I have that list. But to some degree, I think a lot of my comedic voice comes from The Office. That was permeating my brain even before I decided I wanted to get into stand-up. And I think so much of what Steve Carell does and those kind of, like, one of my favorite things to do as a stand-up is throw in, like, a kind of secondary tag, almost like under my breath, that, like, some people catch it and some people don't. And that's really what Steve Carell does so brilliantly in most of those talking heads is those little extra, like, tags that he puts on that I think half the time they're improvised, half the time he's just that good of an actor that mm-hmm. you know, you can't tell if it's improvised or not. But
yeah,
I love it. So it's been fun to listen to, and I'm committed. I'm listening to the rewatch of the rewatch. So
yay,
I'm on board at this point. But awesome. I feel like I have to get to the main focus that I want us to dissect here, which is a more full analysis of comparing Office, both basketball games and personalities, to their basketball counterpart. And I don't want to restrict it to just the NBA. It can be NBA, WNBA, it can be basketball personalities, anything you want. So, Cassie, how well do you remember what you shared on that episode? Or would you prefer if I kind of give a recap of what you said? Because I have that as well.
I mean, I made like a little nerdy doc that I was sharing with Jenna and Angela.
We love a nerdy doc.
We don't need to see this.
All right, so obviously we discussed Dwight already. Very, very much a Nikola Jokic comp. What you said on that episode was that, and this we thought could be grounds for controversy, was that vibe-wise, you made a Michael Scott to LeBron comparison in terms of him being like goofy and family-oriented and like would love to play with his son, that sort of thing. I also think it works on the level of like, Michael Scott is always telling stories that you don't believe, and so is LeBron.
Yeah,
like LeBron loves to share things that you're like, you weren't there. You did not call that like the kind of weird lying about things. I think that it works on that level. But I will say, having rewatched the basketball episode last night, there were two moments that I want to focus on with Michael. Michael at the free throw line. That's Giannis. That is Giannis to a T.
That's what I wrote
down.
20
seconds.
It takes so long.
Oh, that's so good.
But then Michael calling, and I quote directly, a flagrant personal intentional foul. That's Luka. That's Luka Doncic.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
I like that we are Michael Scott, who is clearly like the most detrimental part to the roster. We're comparing him to some of
the
top 10 players in the league right now. Yeah.
Yeah. But just personality wise, not his game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the funny thing is, like, at the time, I don't know when the episode was recorded or when you came up with the idea, but if I think like the time that episode of Office just came out was when LeBron was in his like, oh no, what's going on with LeBron phase.
Oh, no.
So to call him Michael Scott, like, did you put that into the universe? You were like, yeah,
you know,
Michael Scott's like LeBron. And then the basketball universe was like, LeBron's back. Bad now.
I was shocked to hear you as a Clippers fan compare Stanley's handles to James Harden.
I kind of wanted to do a pickup, like a re-record, where I wanted to say like, he's the only one who could dribble like that, like add it to his bag and make it work. Because I do feel like he has like some dribbling where the defender's like, what are you doing? And
right,
you
it does
don't know what he's
them.
Gonna do. And that's like his advantage, because then he'll step back and do a three or like drive it in or just pass it to someone that no one knows was open. So I did feel a little bad. I'm like, I really like James and didn't want to like it came off more harsh than I intended.
Well, I mean, hey, it would be a good problem to have if James Harden listens to Office Ladies and gets back to you about it.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, it could be a great angry email to receive.
I mean, now, I would frame it.
you compared Jim to Austin Reeves, which works not only looks-wise, but also in terms of like Reeves falling into the stands and blushing and getting like nervous in front of the ladies. What I thought for Jim in terms of like his personality, and I think this works on multiple levels, who is someone who is always down for a good prank and who's also named Jim? Jimmy Butler. I feel like
I wrote Jimmy Butler as well. I wrote Jimmy Butler as well, but for a different reason, because in the game, Jim's doing all right. Like he's doing okay, but he ramps it up when Roy elbows him in the face and then he goes supernova. And that reminded me of the Celtics Heat game where Grant Williams, you know, was starting to talk smack to Jimmy Butler and then Jimmy Butler just destroyed him and they went on like a 10-0 run or whatever. And I was like, that's what I've got. So that's funny that we arrived there for different reasons.
I can't explain why, but I was getting some Kevin Love vibes from Roy.
The body type is kind of there. Kevin Love seems like a very nice person. Like,
that's true.
And Roy.
Well, Roy has an interesting arc in the show. It's like he starts out and he's this kind of oaf and doofus, and then he turns out to actually be not so bad. So, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. He told Pam at the start of the game, if you don't tip the ball to me, you're sleeping in the car. I get it's one of those, like, oh, I'm joking, but like, I don't know, man.
But I
was always
think...
out on Roy.
but I season one of The Office, they made so many adjustments. Like Michael's a great example of, he was very much in that like Ricky Gervais sort of like horrible guy, offensive all the time. And then I think they realized that like, in order to sustain the show, he can't be that unlikable. So you have to, you know, make there be more complexity maybe to the Michael Scott character. But Cassie, I'll let you take the lead. Do you have any other thoughts on like comparisons of Office characters and their basketball counterparts?
I mean, it's also fun to think about like characters that didn't play, and like if they did play, what they'd play like, or even characters that like aren't even introduced to the show yet, like because I remember when I was like, I was trying to think of like Roy, and I'm like, what's a good one? And I was like, maybe Draymond Green. And then I was like, no, he does, but he doesn't explode like him. You know what I mean? Like in the episode. And I'm like, Andy would have.
Andy would have.
He would have been the Draymond Green of that episode.
Now I'm just trying to think, who would Gabe be? Who would be Gabe?
Oh, gosh. Gabe, I think Gabe body type is Wembanyama, maybe.
So gangly.
He would be the Office basketball, for sure. They would have so many fun center jokes.
For Andy Bernard, and this is not about his game, but personality wise, I was kind of getting like Jason Tatum vibes, where like he can't figure out what his personality is, so he just tries to like glom onto other people's personalities.
Yeah,
it's pretty good.
Now, I had fun with Angela. I thought to myself, who is tiny and also complaining about everything? Chris Paul.
I kind of like that. Also, Chris Paul is kind of like a mastermind on the court, and Angela kind of, you know, puppeteered the whole Dwight relationship.
I like that a lot.
She's controlling in the office as well. That's pretty good. I was trying to think of who, because on the episode you said Kevin is kind of like Steph, where he was like overlooked, really good three-point shooter. And then they also show clips in the episode of Oscar, like, you know, making trash ball shots into recycling bins and stuff. So I was trying to think like another three-point shooter like Oscar, but I couldn't figure out.
I think I have one for you. And this is more like Oscar personality-wise. He's like intelligent. He has very little patience for idiots, and also can shoot threes, apparently. I think Steve Kerr, like Coach Steve Kerr, is kind of an Oscar sort of energy.
I could see that. I think Oscar would like be a very good smart coach too.
And Kevin, I mean, obviously the jumper was pretty smooth, but in terms of his like basketball game, like big man who can shoot from the outside, kind of like Brooke Lopez vibes, I think. I think that can work. Now for Dwight, there's no better comparison than Jokic, but I also think, and this might be a stretch, I also kind of get like Greg Popovich energy from Dwight, where he's like, he does not suffer fools gladly. He's very serious. He's very focused, and he does not want to answer your stupid questions. Like, I feel like if Jim were a person in the audience at a press conference asking Greg Popovich a question, it would be a very similar reaction to how Dwight reacts to everything that he says.
That's fun.
Now, what about Kelly? Do you have any thoughts on Kelly Kapoor? Because she loves drama.
Yeah, I have one thought. And this is a WNBA reference. She plays for the Connecticut Sun. Her name's Dejanay Carrington.
Sure.
Oh, great.
Yeah, she's so beautiful. All like does her makeup before she gets out on the court and doesn't sweat. And you're just like, how do you do it? You're balling out of your mind. And she can talk a lot of trash and she embraces it.
She does the seatbelt celebration, right? After she gets a defensive stop. Is that her? Or am I confusing her?
But she'll definitely like flip her hair at somebody like after, you know, they talk trash to her and then she like does a good layup and like blows past them.
It is Dejanay. She does it's the click it or ticket. So like after she like after she locks someone up, she'll put on the seatbelt. It's really good. So, and I could see Kelly like orchestrating. She's all about the performance. So she would have an elaborate celebration.
Exactly. Well, I was just gonna say like another fun thing about Dejanay last season was in college she dated Melissa Smith, who is on the Fever, and there were times like where they played and like Dejanay fell down and like Melissa like picked her up in a way where everyone was like, what's that about? And then the whole time was like, are they gonna get back together? And very much like Kelly, like loves her dating life and like would want the office to know what's going on.
Yeah. The will they, like, won't they of like she and yeah. Ryan is kind of like that. I think that's one of my favorite things when people, not that there's any, not that we need any additional reasons to watch the WNBA because it's great, but the fact that like, yeah, you don't also get like relationship drama in the NBA. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe, no. But not that is public. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I love that part of it too.
Yeah.
I also think if Kelly were on Twitter, she would be Kevin Durant, like just always stirring shit up, always probably having like a burner account to mess with people and like
yeah.
clap back at trolls. That would definitely be Kelly's sort of vibe.
Online. Yeah, for sure.
Man. And especially if we get like, I mean, the Kelly and Ryan, will they, won't they, and on and off a lot. But if they were on the same team and they were both dating at the same time, we could get a little bit of the DaWanna Bonner, Alyssa Thomas, where you've got,
oh,
you know, people on the same team yeah. who are in a relationship together. And that yeah. could be a whole another thing. I don't know that theirs would be as harmonious as Alyssa and no. DaWanna seems to be, but
I don't think
we could
so.
At least
I
have
like
similar vibes.
Kelly and Ryan would be like, Ryan's not playing this game because he's mad at Kelly. Fans would be like, but we need you out there. And be like, no, like that's exactly what would happen.
Now, I've got one. We talked about Stanley's dribbling, but in terms of his mm-hmm. personality, how do you feel about this one? When I think about Stanley, he's pretty much like only there to collect a paycheck. He's very annoyed and inconvenienced if he has to put in any effort whatsoever. I think he might be Ben Simmons.
The lack of game, you know, is also there too.
I think it could work. I couldn't think of one for Phyllis because vibe wise, obviously you made the Caitlin Clark comparison with like being overlooked, not getting it, you know, looked at or recruited at UConn and then actually being good. But in terms of her vibes, like Phyllis, she's nice, but also in like a very passive aggressive way a lot of the time.
Yeah, she likes to boast a little bit.
Yeah, I couldn't think of who it was. Any ideas?
She comes into the game, knocks down a shot. So, like, she's efficient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does it with a smile the whole time. I'm trying to think of, nah, I don't think she's silly enough. She's not silly enough to be like Nick Young, who's just like out there being so giggly on the court. But I feel like it would need to be someone that's just like very likable.
Yeah, very jovial.
And,
yeah.
Right. Like someone that you can, like, no one would hate this person.
Maybe a little bit of like Kelsey Plum on the Aces. Like she's someone that's like, yeah, always seems like in a good mood. And if you're rooting against her, you kind of hate her because you're like, stop being good and smiling the whole time. And now she has a cigar business and it's very fun.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, she's
is that her newest
she's
venture?
Gone all in.
Yeah you should follow her on Instagram. It's just like her with a huge cigar in her mouth. I think it was from a couple years ago when they won the championship. She took a picture with a cigar and somebody was like, do you want to sell our cigars or something? So pretty cool.
Yeah, it's been a fun, because I've been following her on Instagram for a while because she went to University of Washington. I live in Seattle. Yeah, it's that whole journey of like, oh, she got famous because she took like a badass picture of her smoking a cigar. And then it started with like small influencer deals of like, oh, I'm working with the cigar brand. And now it's like we've launched the Kelsey Plum line of cigars. It's such like a strange side.
I mean, we've got enough tequilas and mezcals. Let's get into cigars, you know?
Yeah.
We don't need another.
Let's try other things. Maybe ones that don't slowly kill people. But like,
I really like to support the WNBA. Like, if I see like, oh, this brand is, you know, contributing, I'm like, all right, I'm going to like from them. Cigars,
Ruffles,
I feel
chips,
like,
CarMax cars.
You know, I'm always at CarMax, you guys.
but cigars but like, is a step too far.
I'm like, I should buy one, but I probably would just like put it on like a shelf and never smoke it. But
yeah, you're still
You could do Will Smith. You know, you don't light it. It's for the look. You just bite it.
Yeah, so. I take the picture and say, don't smoke, kids, but look cool.
Now, this character I had the most fun with, Toby. The Michael Toby dynamic is like, I think Frame Toby is my favorite episode of The Office. Just like how much he is physically in pain trying to be nice to this person who he despises. Now, I thought to myself, who is someone that nobody likes and would elicit the phrase, why are you the way that you are? Grayson Allen.
Okay. Similarly, my thought was J.J. Redick because Toby, I feel like, doesn't deserve all of the hatred. Like, Grayson Allen did, like, trip people and do some dirty plays. Sure. J.J. Redick was just, like, good and white and went to Duke. And, like, he was, like, kind of talking trash, but, like, nowhere near the shenanigans that Grayson Allen did. So my thought initially was J.J. just because, like, he was so hated. And now we're getting to see more that he seems to be just, like, mostly a good dude, or at least not as deserving of vitriol. So
well,
I think that
some
works
people
out.
Think that Toby was the Scranton Strangler. So with the jury's still out on whether or not he's a good dude. Yeah. It's kind of up in the air.
I mean, office ladies might get to the bottom of it coming up. So,
Ooh, teaser.
Ears out.
Now, who do we think is like, who is the WNBA version of like a Grayson Allen or Dylan Brooks? Like, who's someone who's who people dislike?
Kennedy Carter, for sure.
Oh, I think that's a good comp. Yeah.
That is a good one. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that
And then
works.
I'm trying to think, do we have a player come for... Oh, go on.
One more person from the W popped in my head. Skylar Diggins-Smith, I think is another
Skylar,
one.
Yes! Yeah. Oh, that's a good one. She is supremely hated, and it's one of those, like, is it? Yeah, it's always is it her fault, or were the teams mean to her kind of thing.
Yeah, but I think in terms of, like, Toby personality, I wouldn't give it to Skylar. I think Skylar's personality is more like... Well, maybe a little bit in Toby of like, we got to do our job. You know, like Skylar is like, we need to be doing our job, everybody. And everyone's like, we just want a ball. Like, we'll get the job done. But yeah, I don't know. But yeah, she is pretty good.
Do we have a baller comparison for Erin? Because that's another character we have not addressed.
I mean,
I guess, like, maybe that's Nick Young, like, very bubbly, but, like, not necessarily
kind of
the highest basketball IQ.
Oh, no, is Erin Jordan Poole?
Oh, no.
It doesn't feel like a compliment.
I might give her Cameron Brink, because I think Cameron's, like, very fun, cute, and, like, can't wait to see her back playing in the W, because she did get hurt, but... Just watching her first few games, she was a little getting frustrated with, like, why am I getting, like, called on fouls all the time? And I feel like Erin would be doing that a lot. To be like, what do you mean that's a foul? It's like, Erin, you can't punch people.
That's a good call.
Yeah, I like that part of her personality is that she's, like, weirdly very aggressive at times because she grew up in, like, a foster household.
Right. The Cameron Brink's a good comp. I like it.
All right, we'll wrap up here shortly. I got a couple more for you. Tell me what you think of these. Creed, very compelling character. He has the vibe of like he's always been at the office and will always be there. So I feel like he's Udonis Haslam. He's been around for 40 years. Doesn't really do a lot. Nobody knows what he does. No one knows what he does.
Yeah. That's the biggest thing for Udonis is what do you do?
what do you do here? And then I had for Ryan, he has a very interesting character arc, right? He like starts out very promising. He rises very fast. And then he gets in trouble with the law. He's Ja Morant.
Ja. I'm rooting for Ja. Ryan, I've written off. But Ja, I'm like, come on, buddy.
Oh, Ryan is horrible. I have a lot more faith
Ryan,
in Ja Morant.
Ryan, I have no hope in Ja.
Around.
I'm hoping he'll, I'm rooting for him.
Before we run out of time here, I did want to see, just as a basketball fan, were there any things, because I think when I first watched the episode, I was like, oh, yeah, cool. And this was, you know, like 10 years ago or whatever. But like now that I've become so intense with basketball, the time I got most excited was when Jim set a flare screen for Dwight. Like there were little things like that where I was like, oh, my God, I was so into it. And then I noticed like Jim was wearing the answer threes, like Allen Iverson's shoes. And I was like, that makes sense because of Scranton, Pennsylvania. So were there any things that like upon the rewatch now that you're more into basketball that you didn't pick up on earlier or something that you appreciated more that was like super tiny like that?
Yeah, there is a ton. The one that pops in my head is not like a super advanced thing, but it's something I struggle with in my game sometimes. It's like our team gets the rebound and I'm pretty fast. So I'm like, I'm just going to sprint down and be ready for the ball. But I sprint and I'm not looking at the ball. And then, like, literally the last game I played, like, my coach was like, Cassie, and I'm like, what? And, like, as I'm turning around, like, I got hit with the ball.
Oh, no.
And luckily my teammate was able to recover it. But there's...
So you got an assist.
Yeah, I got an assist. It's great. But there's a scene in basketball where Michael's calling for the ball and then looks away. and gets like the ball thrown at him. And I was just like, oh no, I'm Michael.
That's but, very fun. Yeah. Look, that's a good strategy in pickup, is just like giving more of a damn than everyone else on the court. Like, honestly, if you looked at my statistics of like, where does he get most of his points from, is just from, well, I'm just going to run faster than some other people.
And
people are lazy.
I love the detail of Dwight wearing the face mask. That's very funny. Also him very like funny. Wanting to be,
because his nose was broken, right? Like that was
He was afraid
it was going to get broken or something.
I was afraid it was going to get
also,
broken.
And also, like, the fact that Michael is clearly wearing, like, a Russell Athletics from Kmart matching outfit.
Reebok's
like,
shiny reflective
exactly.
tank
it
top.
Has the vibe of, like, someone in a Bud Light commercial where they can't use the actual team. So it's just like, go sports. Like, that is very, very funny to me.
Do you all think, like, I thought a lot about how Michael overthrows the ball. Like,
oh my gosh,
I'm like, is that anybody in basketball, or is that just Michael Scott, where just consistently throwing it over the hoop?
The thing that it makes me think of, I'm a huge Knicks fan, it makes me think of there was a span last season, for whatever reason, like once every seven games, Josh Hart would try to throw a pass and it would just like go 30 feet way too high, and it was like completely out of character of him, because he's like pretty good. And I feel like that's the same with Michael, because like, sure, he's bad, but like at least a good number of his shots are at least like hitting the backboard, hitting the rim, like they're in the general vicinity of it. But then he has like a couple full court shots or passes that just go like a million miles in the air. So I feel that feels like Josh Hart to me.
I mean, my favorite line of the episode is him saying, "What is wrong with me today?" As if any other day would be different.
That one like made me feel so sad inside, because there was one time when I used to be an engineer before I was full-time with podcasting, and my engineering office, like a bunch of us liked basketball. So one day on a Friday, we stopped working at noon and then like went to a court that we had rented out and then played. And I did not play particularly well. And it just reeked of the, like the one time I played basketball with my coworkers, I can't make a shot. And when he said that, I was like, oh no,
Mike had to work on Saturday. It was brutal.
I did. Yeah. I was like, oh, that was bad.
Well, you know, we all have Michael Scott moments in our game.
It's true.
You know?
It's true.
Well, missing the gimme layup from the gym, diving out of bounds pass. Like, I've definitely, you know, botched a bunny layup like that before. There was enough Michael moments where I was like, oh no, I've done this. Oh no. Oh no.
He is me. I am him.
Yeah. The biggest offense, I think, is if your teammate makes a shot and you go, Dwight, I was open.
Oh, I've played with a lot of people like that. No question about it.
Yeah, of all the bad things he does, easily the worst. Easily the worst. Because Dwight nails a fantastic shot. That's the one after the flare screen. So like, crushing.
Well, Cassie, thank you so much for making the time. We really appreciate it. I think people are going to love this episode. Before we let you go, is there anything that you would personally like to plug for yourself or on behalf of Office Ladies, anything like that?
I mean, keep listening to Office Ladies, and you know, feel free to write in if you like. Have any questions and stuff. We're always looking through fan mail, so just want to encourage people to keep listening and engaging with us. So
amazing.
Sweet.
Well, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. Go Clips, and go W, I guess, until you commit to a team. We'll say just go W in general.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Horus. Horus is hosted by Adam Amawala and Mike Schubert. Our editor is Kensei Suramaki. The music is by Bettina Kampamanis. The art is by Alison Wakeman. The website is by Kelly Schubert. And the social media is by both of the Horus Boys.
Thank you to our producer-level patrons, Polly Bird, Salvatore Testa, Siobhan Ellsbury, Don't Go Chasing Taco Falls, Bang, Bang, Roast Beef Debris, Denver Steam Nuggets, Anna Reed, pass Steph Curry the damn ball so he can shoot a three.
Come on, Brandon, get it together.
Shots fired. Hi, Trish. Chase
Underwood. But they weren't fired.
I guess they weren't. Yeah, it was kind of passive aggressive. Naked Rachel, Sidney Crosby is a vampire, Chelsea's cousin, Ginger Spurs boy balls to the walls, and Mats Furley. You can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Horse Hoops, and on Twitter at Horse_Hoops, because
The Horse Hoops account was run by those towel boys in New Orleans, and they had to get the account shut down.
Delay of tweet warning. I like it. You can go to our website, horsehoops.com, for links to all the fun stuff we talked about today, and even to the basketball episode of The Office, if you want to give that a rewatch.
Yes, NBC really needs those viewership numbers. They're struggling.
Yeah. We got to make Peacock a thing, everybody, if we all work together.
Yes, and if you want to support the Horse Boys, equally struggling just as much as major broadcasting networks, you can go to patreon.com/horsehoops and get access to the new tiers and all the fun stuff that we do there. And then also, you can go to horsehoops.com/merch. We've got digital merch items. We've got physical things. You can get Subnerds as basketball shirts. Lots of good stuff over there. But we will conclude this episode, as we always do, by putting our hands in the middle and saying something on the count of three. This is coming out New Year's Eve, yeah?
Yeah, I guess Happy New Year.
Did you say Happy New Year on three?
Yeah.
Easy peasy? Let's do it. 1, 2, 3.
Happy New Year!
How late does your show go? Are you doing like up until the ball drops?
No, thank God. It's one show at 7:30, and that's perfect. Like, the idea of being on stage, having to lead a champagne toast for a bunch of drunk assholes is not wildly appealing to me.
Everyone making out with each other.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It'll be the perfect. I get to do a show, get paid more than I usually would because it's New Year's Eve, and then enjoy some quiet time with Celia. Not
amazing.
On stage.com.
Love it.